You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Welcome, scrappy, scrambling, but scrumptious, scrupulous screwballs. This is Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. Today's show is episode 271, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen. And we are your sparkling, sparkly, sparky, sparring Spartans and spare ribs.
I'm Colin.
And I'm Chris.
Beep, 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 beep. I have some trivia news about trivia. My sister, who lives in the Washington, D.C. area, shared a link in our Good Job Brain Globetrotters fan group, an article from the Washington Post. About the scandal, a team that cheated at a local bar, cheated pub trivia, and the article dives deeper into trying to find out who did it, why, explaining the phenomenon that is a pub trivia.
Ah, that's a good lens.
The article is titled, if you want to go check it out, Inside the Cheating Scandal Rocking DC's Trivia Scene.
Ooh. What were they doing?
I'm gonna check this out.
Is it like the people that were cheating at chess?
Is it a scandal? It's scandalous, but really it's cheating with like an Apple Watch and Shazamming Music Round.
Oh, okay.
You know, cheating sucks. It's not new news that people cheat at pub trivia. Smartphones just made it easy to do so if you want to.
Yeah, you're just cheating yourself, you know?
Wow. Thanks, Dad.
Yeah, some dad wisdom here for you.
Listeners who play pub trivia, tell us the crazy ways you've seen people cheat. I've never seen the hold my Apple Watch up to the speaker to Shazam a music round.
I used to play at a local unnamed establishment here in Berkeley.
Ooh,
and
know,
there was a crew of people who would always hang out by the bar. And I'm just going to say this. It was uncanny how good this team was at the music round. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Didn't matter what the theme was, one hit wonders. I mean, esoteric tracks. They would always be pulling out like 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10. I'm like, all right, somebody over there is Shazamming. I'm like, this is silly.
But then bomb like the rest of the round.
Yes. It didn't carry over to any other round. I'm like, come on, you can't be that targeted in your knowledge.
Anyways, well, speaking of trivia, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz, Hot Shot, No Cheating Allowed. Here I have two random...
I'm going to try to cheat this round. Yeah.
Well, I think that's why normal trivia, it's like fast. Like, you don't really have time to look it up.
Yeah.
But here we go. We have today randomly drawn Trivial Pursuit cards, 1990.
Okay, just the year 1990.
Yeah,
all right.
And
it was alive.
Genus 4. Yes, we were. Were we alive? Yes, we were alive.
And paying attention. So yeah. Let's see how this goes.
Here we go. 1990, 1990. You guys have your barnyard buzzers. Buzz in with the right answer. Pink Wedge. What 15-year-old actress documented her 6 years of drug and alcohol woes in the autobiography Little Girl Lost?
Ooh, 1990? 15 years old at that time?
15.
I read about this. Okay.
Colin.
Was that Drew Barrymore?
Yes, it is Drew Barrymore.
Okay.
15
in 1990.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I was just trying to figure who would be. Okay,
I was going to say that, but I just thought it was too, she would have been older by then.
Older,
right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yellow Wedge, what company sparked the spread of digital photography with its photo CD system?
Oh, gosh.
Colin.
I'm going to go maybe on a limb. Is it Philips?
Incorrect.
Okay.
You're thinking about CDI. Photo CD system.
Kodak?
It's Kodak.
Okay.
Is just the CDs for photos?
You would go and like get your film developed or something like that. But it was photos.
But you would get it on a CD. You would get it on a CD. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Brown Wedge, what Saturday Night Live cast member based one of his best loved characters on his mother-in-law? Oh, Chris.
Mike Myers.
Yes!
Mm.
Which, oh, Coffee Talk?
Linda Richman.
Chickpeas, neither chick nor peas.
I'm verklempt.
God, we're so old. That's such an old skit.
Very old. Yeah, I know.
1990. And it's funny
because I watched that as a kid, and like right. I thought it was so funny just because it's like a funny accent. Like, I had no idea.
Sure, that, of any of the content.
Yeah. Yes. Barbara Streisand. Right. I just love, you know.
There are a lot of Linda Richmans in the world.
Yep. We're just boomers doing Jackie Gleason impressions at this point. The moon, Alice!
Orange Wedge, what TV character's bejeweled corpse sparked an interest in half-heart necklaces?
Wow!
TV character's bejeweled corpse
Okay.
sparked an interest in half-heart necklaces. Colin.
Laura Palmer?
Yes!
Oh. Okay.
All right.
But when you the say a bejeweled heart. Corpse.
Yes. Bejeweled corpse. Well, you're imagining, like, you know, coated in rhinestones,
yes.
right?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Not bedazzled.
Not it's not bedazzled. A bedazzled corpse, right. Yes.
Bedazzled corpse.
Yeah.
Good job. Green Wedge, what nation did the U.S. government attempt to broadcast Democratic propaganda to via TV Marti? What is that? That's big M-A-R-T-I, TV Marti. Colin.
I think that's Cuba, yeah?
Yes, it is Cuba.
Okay. Nice. Wow.
What is TV Marti? Is that channel?
Basically the U.S. equivalent of, like, you know, radio free. It was just like TV, you know, yeah, exactly.
Hmm. What Czech-born puckster was the last NHL player named league MVP in the 90s?
Oh, man.
Just what do you mean that was the last?
Just not my sport.
I've heard of this name before. There's not a lot of vowels.
Okay.
It's alliterative.
Mm-hmm.
Has a four-letter last name.
You're giving us so much here to work
with. What are the initials?
JJ.
Oh,
I know.
Colin.
After six hints, including the number of letters and the first letter of his last name, I'm going to go with Jaromir Jagr.
Yes!
Okay.
Oh, okay. I have heard that name, but I wouldn't have been able to recall it. That's cool.
Thanks. Appreciate the very long lead of rope.
All right, next card, new card. Woo, shake it off. 1990, kind of tough. All right, here we go. Genus 4, Blue Wedge, People and Places. What was the official language of England from 1099 until 1399?
Oh, interesting.
1099 until...
1399, so 300 years.
Yes, exactly. Okay, all right.
It's not English.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Okay,
Chris.
French.
Francais. Yes,
that's right.
Pink Wedge, what screen high schooler is the assistant and friend of Dr. Emmett Brown? Chris.
Marty McFly.
From Back to the Future. Yellow Wedge, what European country had kings nicknamed the lazy, the fat, and the quarrelsome? Mm. They're three different people. Just three.
Yeah.
So someone the lazy. Colin.
Well, see, sticking with the theory that not everyone's going to be reading these questions in order. I'm just going to say England.
It is France.
Ah, oh, man.
Another one.
It was almost there.
Yeah, inverse. Almost okay. there. So close. Brown Wedge, Science and Nature, what does the itis mean in bronchitis?
Oh.
Chris.
Is it like illness? Malady of
you
the?
You can be a little bit more specific.
Oh.
Colin.
It's like inflammation.
Inflammation.
Inflammation. Yeah. Okay.
Itis.
Okay.
Itis. Okay. Yeah,
Green Wedge for Sports and Leisure. What South American country observed 3 days of national mourning when Formula One racer Ayrton Senna died? Ayrton. Chris, go for it.
Monaco?
South American country.
Oh, South American country.
Yes.
Missed that part.
South American country observed 3 days of national mourning.
Okay, okay. All right. I'll guess again. Why not?
Okay.
Okay, there's only like 10 countries down there.
Okay.
Argentina.
Incorrect. Colin. Dang it.
Brazil.
Probably a better, it's a much bigger country.
Yeah, just more people. Yeah. All right, last question on this card. What did Buddha define as the reward obtained by the suppression of desire?
Oh.
Chris.
Nirvana. Smells like teen spirit.
Yes. All right, good job, brains. Well, Colin, you're not the topic picker for this episode. Someone beat you to it.
It was me. The other person on the podcast. We actually didn't record episodes for the last couple of weeks because I was on vacation. And for our family vacation, we went on a cruise. But not just any cruise. We went on a Disney cruise. And not just any Disney cruise. We went on the Disney Wish, their newest and ship. Biggest boat. It's the new ship, so it's got the Star Wars hyperspace lounge.
Oh,
so
cool.
Like, you step through a Star Wars door and you're in. It's like you're on an actual cruise ship in the middle of the ocean pretending to be on a Star Wars cruise ship, and there's a massive monitor, so you're looking out the window, and it's
space.
Every 5 minutes you like go through hyperspace out the window, and then you're in front of a new Star Wars planet, which of course it's all canonical, which ships are near the planets, and all the bartenders know, and they'll tell you, and you know, you can spend certain amounts of money on Star Wars drinks and stuff like that, but that's like one thing you could do. And there's shows on board and food, and they just take care of you all day. So I kind of came back and it's like, oh, what are we gonna do for the topic? I'm like, let's do at sea, because that's that's where I was. So like, let's talk about like stuff involving the ocean, the water out on the ocean.
So this week, we're sailing the seven seas.
Well, Karen, let me ask you, what is a pirate's favorite letter?
R?
Nay, ye think it be the R, but 'tis the C.
It's a great dad joke. It's so
yeah,
great.
It is, because you think you're clever because you're like, oh, I see the pun.
Yeah, no, you see, yes, you missed it.
What a twist.
Anyway, yeah. So on this Disney cruise ship that I was on, I actually, Karen, you'd be interested in this. There's lots. May Karen in particular. Maybe Colin too. There's a lot. I mean, as I've been saying, there's just so much to do. There's so much on the ship. There is something on this ship that I just wanted to mention also, that there's it's called Aquamouse, and it's Disney bills it as the only Disney attraction at sea.
So
cruise ships have water slides and water rides and stuff
that,
like on the top deck kind of going around the ship. So what Aquamouse is, it's effectively a water ride on a tube, but it starts out with a Disney dark ride type presentation where you slowly get, as you're slowly going up the track to get taken up high so you can slide down, they're showing segments of a Mickey Mouse adventure on a series of monitors that are giving you the storyline of what's going on.
And you're on a tube?
You're on a tube. You're in your swimsuit on a tube. It's not nearly as like complicated as other Disney dark rides, but they're essentially trying to do
dark
ride. And then once you get to the end of that point, then it kind of becomes a more standard kind of water slide until the end.
Basically.
But yeah, so it's cool. So, I mean, they're just, they put all kinds of things on these cruise ships, especially the Disney ones, all these crazy things that you can go and do. We asked around because we're nerds and we're very curious, and it's a big, big ship, but there's 4,000 passengers and 1,500 crew members.
Oh.
So that's a pretty low ratio of like crew members to passengers.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like, almost like 1 to 2, 2 and a half.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. The Disney Wish is a bigger ship, but it has the same number of passengers as other Disney ships. So it's just, it feels like more spacious. You know what I mean? Like you never really feel like there's things are too crowded. The other side of that is that like, there's like an entire world on that cruise ship that you're never going to see.
Oh,
like one of the big things being the fact that there's 1500 crew members who are living on this ship.
Living in the walls.
Basically. Downton Abbey, They live on the ship. It is like Downton Abbey because it's like there's the servants' quarters and stuff like that, but it's like the crew living areas on this ship are... Well, and you would never go see that as a passenger, but it's like they will live on this ship for, you know how it kind of works, right? With a cruise ship, people who work on cruise ships, it's like they sign up for like a 6 month or a 4 month or whatever it is contract.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're just on the ship for that whole time and they work every day, but they get breaks and they get, you know, they don't get days off, but they get chunks of the day off. But it's like there's crew pools, there's crew recreation areas. Yeah,
they're not just hanging out at the snack bar and, you know, on the rides with all the paying customers.
It's like a whole world.
Really, so the whole point of what I wanted to talk about here is I started looking like, well, what are other things like that are on cruise ships that you might be surprised to know exist on a cruise ship that maybe you don't see? So... I did some research into this, and I'm here to tell you about maybe two major things, basically. So one of them is a place that maybe you think you want to go, but you really don't, which, of course, is Disney Jail.
Oh!
Is there Disney Jail? Yes, there is. So if you mess up badly enough while you're on your Disney cruise, you may find yourself tossed in the brig, which is a like a jail cell, like it's in the bowels of the ship. So people ask, like, is there brig? Like, is there Disney Jail on the Disney ship? And yes, it does exist. But what it seems like is that the brig on the cruise ship is like the absolute last resort solution. Like, if you, like, killed somebody on the
cruise, you just cannot be dealt with in any other manner.
Right. Now, they do sometimes, if they do have a problem guest who maybe is too inebriated or, you know, or either way was being too violent or whatever it was, what they'll, the first thing that they'll try to do is they'll confine them to their cabin. So if you ever see, like, a security guard hanging out outside of, like, somebody's stateroom. They might be confining someone in the cabin.
Ooh.
Right. Of course, there's security teams on these cruises, but they try their very best to not really be seen by anybody, right?
Yeah.
But if you did see somebody waiting outside, they could be confined to the cabin. So you'd really have to try very, very hard to go to Disney Jail. like even more so because before you even got there, they'd probably like confine you to your cabin first. So I don't think it's a fun jail. Like you shouldn't try to go. It's not like the Aqua Mouse of jails, right?
As soon as you dock, the local authorities is gonna come in and take you out.
They're gonna take you right out.
Yes.
But that's
and
the thing.
Yeah, it's not gonna be goofy and
There is, if you do go down there, the key to the cell is hanging off the collar of a dog that's just outside the bar. But they've got, like, the cruise that we went on was 4 nights. So it's like you get on the ship and then, like, the next morning you're in the Bahamas and then you get back on the ship and the next morning you're at Disney's Island and then you get back on and then you're at sea for a day and then you get off. But it's like they have transatlantic Disney cruises and they have cruises that last for a long time. If you were on a Disney cruise and you were out in the middle of the Atlantic or something like that and things... your day got like considerably worse, you could be making a trip to the most exclusive Disney club out there, which is the Disney Morgue. Because yes, these ships do in fact have a morgue.
They have to.
They're shuttling around millions of people every year. People are going to die on the cruise. Like
Disney's most exclusive club.
The, We have to go to the Disney Morgue. You don't want to go there, but they're legally required to have it and body bags because again, like if somebody were to die, like you would need to do. So the thing is, while people could potentially die from like a freak accident or something like that, like unexpectedly, the majority of deaths on cruise ships are from old age or associated maladies, which makes sense considering the demographics of people who take a lot of cruises tend to be older or retired. Some people retire. If you look at this, there's articles about people who retire to cruise ships. Like, they don't go into an assisted living facility or they don't go buy a house in Florida. They just take their money and they just
cruise
start,
it out.
They cruise it out. They cruise to the end. And it's quite common for elderly people to die on cruise ships. Sometimes people who, like, have a terminal illness will get on a cruise ship hoping that they die at sea, right? So they all have to be ready for this. So
that's,
you know,
I feel again, so it's so rough for the people working on the ship.
For the people working on it. Yeah. So they're secret. So of course, when something very bad happens, they really want to avoid upsetting anybody else on the cruise, you know, so it's sort of taken care of very swiftly, you know, and as discreetly as possible. But there are secret codes that you might hear get announced on some of these ships, and these are ones that apparently Disney does use. So if you are ever on a Disney cruise and you hear being announced like Operation Bright Star is like a serious medical emergency, like we need people to come do Operation Bright Star. This I find hilarious. Operation Rising Star, can you guess what that is?
Someone throwing up.
No. That's a dead body.
Oh, that's Lord. Like
stars,
Rising Star.
Operation Rising Risen. Star.
Oh, Lord.
That's, if you hear Operation Rising Star, that is somebody died on your cruise.
Wow.
May also be like a catastrophic, you know, medical, like serious thing, but generally that means death. And then also I find this one very, very funny. If you hear them paging Mr. Mob, can you guess what that is? Yeah, Mr. Mob, M-O-B. Mr. Mob,
Man Overboard.
Paging Mr. Mob. Man Overboard, that's right. That is their cutesy way of saying Man Overboard. Somebody fell off a cruise ship. Do you know what you do if you fall off a cruise ship?
No. How often does that happen?
It happens. If you fall off a cruise ship, what you do is you die.
Because it's so tall.
Because the ship. Well, first of all, yeah. Assuming you survive your like multi-story fall into the water, the ship's moving real fast.
Yeah,
and it can't just
stop it, pick you up,
and turn. Now they can pinpoint where you fell in. Because if somebody reports that they fell in, they know where the ship was at that point.
Yeah.
But they gotta like turn around and come back. But at that point, it's like it's the ocean. It's not like you're in a pond. It's like the ocean's probably carried you away or down at that point. There are stories of person goes overboard on a cruise ship and is rescued, but that's like miracle type situation.
Wow.
Another reason on top of that, like why do they pretty much die, is because they were probably drunk and they were probably climbing up doing somewhere they weren't supposed to be or doing something stupid. And if you're that trashed and you fall off a cruise ship, you're probably not going to think of like, what are some good survival strategies I can employ to stay alive in the water? You're probably just going to drown. So don't fall off a cruise ship, but you're probably not going to fall off a cruise ship.
Do not do it. And don't get drunk and climb on the outside of the ship, please.
Well, it's the same reason that like the deadliest ride at Disney is the People Mover, the Disney World, because it's just that slow moving. It's not that slow moving, but it's a monorail where you're just sitting there going around. But then that's the ride where like you're not buckled in and people think it'd be really funny to like get drunk, get on the People Mover, stand up, wave, and you know, and then
climb
they
climb into someone else's car. Right,
exactly. Yes, that's my fun story about how to go to jail and die.
How to go in jail and die
on your cruise. Don't do it. It's hotter than Club 33, baby. Can't get in. People are dying to get in. There's room for one more. I could not verify this. I saw this in one source, and you know, as a journalist, I don't want to, you know, you gotta try to verify with multiple sources, but I did see that on a Disney cruise, if you hear Operation Winnie, that means that
someone pooed in the pool.
Yes.
No.
I only saw that one place, and I would not want to say that's that it's fact.
I want it to be true. I want it to be true.
It's too obvious.
It's a little on the nose.
Yeah. Well, speaking of at sea travel, let's travel the world and sail around and visit some islands. More specifically, their top level domains.
Oh.
Here I have a quiz about top level domains, country or territory codes at the end of links, URLs. So, mm-hmm. for example, .UK is the top level domain for United Kingdom, .ca is Canada, and so forth. But here I have a quiz and they're all islands.
All right.
Island okay, territories right. or nations, areas that have their own top level domain. This will be a write down quiz.
Ooh.
Okay, okay.
All right. Here we go. For all of these questions, you're either going to write what the two-letter top-level domain is, dot okay. blank blank, or the actual territory name.
All right.
In some okay. cases, you have to give me both.
All right.
Ooh.
Here we go. Question number one. Thanks to ChatGPT Fever, this British overseas territory in the Caribbean has generated over $28 million in revenue in 2023. Thanks to this top level domain.
Yeah.
Please name the island. Here's the question again. Thanks to ChatGPT Fever, this British overseas territory in the Caribbean has generated over $28 million in revenue in 2023.
I'm sure you can I feel guess good the about half. Part. Yeah, I feel good yeah. about half of it.
I know. I have the domain. Man. I don't know.
I just gotta put something that starts with that letter. All right.
Is it Island British Overseas Territory in the Caribbean?
Okay, maybe I have it. Okay.
Maybe you can go through the lyrics of Kokomo. All right. answers up.
Oh.
Colin has written .ai and scribbles, and Chris has written .ai Antigua. So close.
Oh.
Anguilla.
Anguilla.
Oh my gosh.
Anguilla.
Yes.
Anguilla, very, very fortunate to have .ai as their top-level domain.
Yeah.
And has generated a lot of money, 15% of its GDP, by letting all of these now AI companies
fantastic.
Use it for their websites.
For them.
Fantastic. Yep. I have a feeling that might be a theme of some of these domains, right? It's yes. like, oh, yes. hey, we were just fortunate yes. enough to have this.
Right.
Here we go. Next question. Job searching services and specifically professional resume services might use this island's domain.
Say it again.
Job searching services, specifically professional resume
oh, wow.
services.
Oh, sure.
Might use this island's domain.
Okay. This is another island in the... Oh, no, we don't know where this island is.
This is in West Africa. How's that?
Okay.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I got it.
You know, we're in the age of
a
lot of layoffs happening.
Let me be really clear. I am very confident. That does not mean that I have it. It's just a feeling that's inside me most of the time. Yeah.
Answers up. Here we go. Colin has put .hr. And Chris
I like Chris's answer.
.cv for Cape Verde. It is .cv for nice. Cape Verde.
Nice. All right.
Didn't even think about that. That's
a lot
good.
Of businesses doing like a resume writing resume tweaking, optimizing, scanning for keywords, that kind of stuff. All right. Well, GG, good game. A lot of games and gaming companies have been using .gg in their links, in their websites. .gg is the top-level domain for what self-governing dependency of the British Crown? This island is located in the English Channel, yet is not part of the United Kingdom.
Oh, gosh.
Okay.
Let me say it all over again. GG, good game. Discord uses it. A lot of other gaming sites use it. .gg, good game. .gg is the top level domain for what self-governing dependency of the British Crown located in the English Channel? The island is thus not part of the United Kingdom.
Oh, no.
Starts with a G.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Answers up. Colin has put Guernsey and Chris has put Galapagos.
I've moved it there.
It is Guernsey, the Ballywick of Guernsey. Guernsey.
What a great word.
Guernsey. Ballywick of Guernsey. Also fortunate to have .gg.
GG.
I mean, no one planned this, right? You can't really plan it. All right, next question. Washington Post and Australian Post. Washington Post, the newspaper, Australian Post, as in their mailing service, their national mailing service, use the URL shortcut .st, obviously, like post, P-O, and then .st. .st comes from what pair of archipelagos off the coast of Central Africa? They're like an island nation, but they're composed of two collection of islands. .st.
Jeez. I should, you know, with my kids studying of geography and flags, like I should know this.
It has a good flag.
He would know this.
Yes.
I never thought about that. I see those WAPost links all the time. Never thought about it.
Yeah.
All right. Answers up. Something. Colin, oh, ST.
That's it.
Sao Tome and Principe, and then... Chris put Seychelles. Both places have very awesome flags, but Sao Tome and Principe is correct.
There we go.
.st.
.st. I wonder if Principe feels kind of left out. They're like, you know, we can't help but notice, Sao Tome, that you got both letters there. You know, yeah. just saying.
Next question. If you're a radio or audio-related business, you can get .am. From Armenia. Or you can get .fm from what collection of islands in Oceania? I don't see a lot of .ams, but I remember .fm, last FM. .am Armenia. .fm from what collection of islands?
Okay.
And .fm is kind of using letters from their full long name.
Okay. All right. You're making me feel better about
validate.
You did. You helped me feel more solid about what I wrote down.
All right. Answers up. Colin put Micronesia and Chris put Maldives. It is the Federated States of Micronesia.
Ooh.
FM. Oh. Good job, Colin. I was hoping that
it was like Federation, Federated. Okay. Nice.
.fm. All right, next question. Hey, hot stuff. You can slide into what island's domain?
Oh.
Hey, hot stuff. You can slide into what island's domain?
Yeah.
All right, answer's up.
Okay. Hold on.
Okay.
I got at least half a point.
All right.
I hope.
Colin has put DM, .dm, Dominican Republic. Chris also wrote .dm. Yes, you can slide into DMs for Dominica. Not Dominican Republic. Dominica.
Okay.
Also in that region. Dominica got its name from Mr. Christopher Columbus, who's like, We found an island. What day is it today? It's a Sunday. All right, let's call it Sunday Dominica. It's the origin of the name. All right, last question. If you operate and own a chicken company, you're in luck because you can get the domain ender.co.ck from what island?
Wow.
If you operate and own a chicken company, you're in luck because you can get the domain ender.co for company.ck.
From what island?
From what island?
Okay.
If you need a clue, it is in Polynesia.
Okay.
Lots of islands there.
I got to guess. I think this is a place.
All right. All right, answers up. Colin has put Cook Island. Chris has put Cook. Both correct. It is Cook Island. Ooh. Self-governing while in free association with New Zealand. So Cook Island, also known as Kuki Arani in Maori. Yes, good job. Thank you.
Woo! That was good. That was really good. Man, I mean, I'm looking at all of these, right? We got, .ai, .cv, .gg, .st, .fm, .dm. Yeah, it's like you all just like you're sitting on this little gold mine of opportunity just when the technology comes along, right? Everyone's looking at Tuvalu with .tv. They're like, all right, we're waiting our turn. We're waiting our turn.
So .tv, Colin, you shared that with us on a very early episode. Good job, Brain. It is my favorite fact to share.
Because
it makes people be like, oh, yeah, it's a country.
You take it for granted. It's a place that had this that had nothing to do with TV. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. Don't get seasick.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Calling all kids in the car. Brittany and Meredith here from the chart-topping Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast. Are you dreading another silent car ride with the fam? We've got the cure. 3 rounds of fresh trivia every single week. Movies, music, even science and Disney. We've got something for every trivia buff in the car. No more crickets chirping on those long journeys. The Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast is your secret weapon for connecting and laughing with kids of all ages, teens, toddlers, adults, it doesn't matter. Spark their curiosity and challenge their brains with every episode. New episodes drop weekly wherever you get your podcasts. Search for the Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast and turn those car rides into epic adventures.
You're listening to Good Job Brain. Smooth puzzles, smart trivia. Good job, Brain.
And we're back at sea.
Back.
Like thematically, not like actually at sea.
Yeah, currently none of us are at sea.
I can't deal with motion sickness. I will puke my brains out. But Colin, what is your segment?
Well, yes, I, in fact, also just returned from a trip.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah, it was nice. I was not at sea. I was decidedly, firmly on ground, on land, away from the sea. I was in Texas, in fact, the great state of Texas. I was in the city of Lampasas, Texas. In fact, I sent you guys a photo of my time in Lampasas, Texas, because I stopped by the world's largest spur.
Incredible.
Yes.
It's standing. Just the spur. There's no boot or shoe.
No
it's
boot.
It's just the spur.
And just one spur, not a pair of spurs, like to be clear, right? It is, yeah. I was showing the photo to my wife, and she was a little bit, you know, let's just say unimpressed. Oh, she's like, oh, it's just one. So it's one spur. I was like, yeah, it's the world's largest Spur, singular. But as delightful as that was, I was not in Lampasas, Texas to see the world's largest spur. That was merely a bonus. I was there to experience, in person, on the ground, a total solar eclipse.
Oh, yes. You're one of those people.
I am one of those people.
Totality now.
It was my second total eclipse. It was cooler than the first one. You guys may remember I went to go see in 2017. I went to see a total eclipse in Idaho. I was bitten by the eclipse bug. And on that very day, started looking up, all right, when's the next one? And
really?
My partner who I often go on camping trips with, you know, he and I were like, all right, we're going to go to the next one. Then that 7 years in the future in 2024 on April 8th, that if we could get ourselves to Texas, we would be able to catch the total solar eclipse, which happened just 4 days ago on Monday of this week.
So you guys planned it in the books for 7 years.
We agreed 7 years ago, like, we're going to be there and we're going to make it happen. It was magical. It was special. It was cool. It was awesome. It was all of that. You know, the darkness is coming, right? I mean, that's kind of the point. It's like, it gets really dark. The thing that maybe not everyone is prepared for is the temperature drop. As soon as totality happens, the temperature drops right away, and it really violates, I think, the expectations or sort of the sense a lot of us have that, you know, like, even if it's hot during the day and cold at night, I think some of us imagine, I certainly did, that the day losing heat is kind of like an oven losing heat. Like, it's, oh, it's the sun goes away and the heat just kind of takes a while to go away. But no, it loses heat gradually because the sun goes down gradually. That if you take the sun away immediately, it gets cold almost immediately. Mm. Noticeable. It's really very humbling to experience that in person. So that, you know, in the darkness, birds start kind of freaking out because the birds are trying to scramble to get back to their nest. They're like, oh, it's nighttime, guys. And then, like, birds are just like, rah, 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 flying back to their trees.
Colin, I have a dumb question because I wasn't paying attention on the day of the eclipse. What time did it happen?
So where we were in that part of Texas, it was around 12:30 local time that it all started. So, it all started. It reached peak. Wow. Peak eclipse was around 1:30 thereabouts. Lasted over 4 minutes.
Wow. So you did feel cold.
Yes.
In the middle of the day, like at noon.
I mean, the streetlights went on, you know, like, it's that enough of a change. And several degree temperature drop. Absolutely.
You can weird. Feel it. Okay.
It is. And it's unlike anything else. And it was cool. A very communal experience. The crowd was cheering. And not far away from us was a group of some college kids. And they were skipping school. They had traveled all the way from California to see this. I won't out them or what school they go to.
You don't have to go to class in college, though.
Yeah. That's the beauty.
I think they're probably freshmen, you know, still hadn't figured that out yet. All right, so this is an eclipse on land in Texas. I promise I will get us back to the sea here, our topic here. So in the run-up to this trip, I was doing a lot of preparation. You know, I mean, it did start nominally seven years ago.
Took a round piece of black car, you know, construction paper outside, and I held it up to the sun, just get a feel for it, you know?
I had a Google map like that had, I had overlaid the line of the path of totality, right? So so let's just recap very quickly. So this eclipse that we saw, so it, as far as the United States is concerned, it entered U.S. territory on the southern Texas border, up over Texas, and kind of moved east out, covered 13 states in total. As I was getting closer to the eclipse, you know, there were a lot of articles from the scientific angle of, like, best places to, you know, avoid cloud cover and, you know, what's the weather going to be like. And then I also started reading a lot of articles covering the eclipse, not from a scientific perspective, but from a travel, tourism, lifestyle angle. I saw articles about, you could chart the rapid increase in Airbnb and rentals overlaid across the path of totality moving across the states, right? A lot of people booking very expensive luxe destination trips. A lot of people getting out in the wilderness, finding a path and kind of roughing it and camping. A lot of ways to approach it. I came across the story of a truly inspiring man. I think someone right at home among the Good Job Brain greats here in doing my
Hall of Famer
research. A Hall of Famer. I'm going to nominate this person for the Good Job Brain Hall of Fame. This is a man named Ted Pedas, P-E-D-A-S. And he passed away a few years ago, but he lived a very long, rich life as a well-known and beloved astronomy educator, mentor, philanthropist, somebody who was really all about just wonder, the joy of discovery, a real to the bone teacher and lover of knowledge. And more specifically, he was a pioneer in eclipse parties and eclipse appreciation and eclipse enthusiasm. His love of eclipses started when he, you know, saw the first one in the 1960s.
Okay.
And kind of got smitten with eclipse bug. And in 1970, he and his sister and his wife at the time and his brother-in-law got it in their heads they were going to stage Eclipse 70 Festival, all right? So there was an eclipse coming in 1970. They discovered that the very small town, population 150,
whoa,
the small town of Eclipse, Virginia, was in the path of eclipse path, right? 80-mile-wide path. So like, oh, this is great. We're going to set up. Like I know. It's like, it's awesome. It's perfect. Like, right? I mean, how could you say no to this? Except the town of Eclipse, Virginia, very much said hard no to this. They were not, not interested in what they perceived to be some sort of maybe hippie festival that was coming together. They were going to, put this together on the banks of the river. It was going to be really cool. The locals first started demanding a security check at the drawbridge of the so-called heliophiles coming to see the eclipse.
Heliophiles.
Yes. They demanded that he not allow anybody in who advocated the overthrow of the federal government or were disrespectful to the flag or had long hair. So it's very clear town was. Yeah. So this failed, all right? And so now the path of this eclipse, it started in Mexico, moved north across the U.S., and around Norfolk, Virginia, it jutted out to sea, okay? And it passed over Nantucket.
Oh, okay.
They thought, you know, okay, maybe we could stage the eclipse festival on Nantucket. Also did not come together. They just couldn't get it happen. As they were taking the ferry back from Nantucket, they had an idea. What if we had our eclipse party on a ship?
On a boat!
Yes, on a boat. And that is where Ted Pedas took his legacy into the next level, because he became the father of ocean-going astronomy parties and ocean-going science parties. Over his life, he put together dozens of cruises to go out and look at not just eclipses, but Halley's Comet, meteor showers. That's right. I mean, the Hale-Bopp Comet. And what he would do is he would plot the course, find out where in the ocean you needed to be, and basically wrangle together people out on a boat and get them out there. Now, the very first sort of seabound expedition, it was hard coming together. So they, so they started planning for a 1972 eclipse in Nova Scotia. Okay. And they went to 8 shipping lines, cruise lines. You know, apparently at this time in the early 70s, this was a real down period for the cruise industry. And, you know, oil crisis, a lot of other things going on. And so they were kind of coming to these cruise lines like, hey, we can bring interested paying customers on you. Let's go do the specialty thing. And none of them were interested in chartering these special, you know, out going out hundreds of miles out into the North Atlantic. Finally, after several efforts, they were able to book the Eclipse 72 trip on the Olympia. And it took all of their money, like their life savings. They advertised.
No.
Yes, they were so down on this mission. They put ads in Sky and Telescope magazine. They put ads in Natural History. They bought ads in Scientific American. I mean, this is 1972. Yep. They're not on the internet, right? You got to go like, where are the nerds? Where are we going to find the science-minded nerds who might pay their money to come on an eclipse cruise with us? it did pay off. And apparently the Ocean Line company said that they had record setting revenues for this trip.
Wow.
So that allowed them to sort of, you know, build on this for future ones. Yeah. So it sounded like just a real hodgepodge of people aboard this first cruise. I mean, they got 850 passengers.
That's together. A lot.
Yeah, that is
lot. This inaugural cruise.
Yeah, in 1972, where they did not have the, you know, Disney Wish that can carry, you know, 4,000 passengers. They ran another one the very next year called the Voyage to Darkness. On that ship, Isaac Asimov himself attended, lectured, yes. And that was kind of the mission that Pedos was on. I mean, he was not just sailing people out to look at something
the
cool, but exactly, like very sort of proto TED Talk. That's right. So he would have educators, thinkers, interesting people from all sort of associated stripes or anyway, you know, adjacent to astronomy. To also, you know, emphasize, maybe it's not so obvious, in addition to not having to deal with, you know, some local township not wanting, you know, hippies or free thinkers on their property, if you're on a boat, it gives you a lot of maneuverability too, you know, like a problem, you know, for a lot of eclipse watchers. And indeed, this was true on the one that I was just in, you know, people a little bit further south of me were clouded out. They couldn't see it.
Oh,
but if you're,
no.
if you're on a ship and you see cloudy conditions, you can adjust your position half a day, a few hours ahead. You can kind of look with the satellite imagery. That's right. You're not kind of locked in and committed. I was just blown away. Just what a great idea this is. And he was running and organizing these science cruises and eclipse cruises all the way up to the end of his life. And every you know, person who had something to say about this guy just talked about how committed he was to teaching, learning, enjoying the stars, and the travel leisure lifestyle sort of approach to eclipse can really be traced back to these first 1970, 1972, 1973 eclipse things. They got a lot of media coverage. The New York Times wrote them up. The fact that it was a success for the cruise, it really placed a spark in sort of the popular imagination that it maybe wasn't just some nerdy, you know, astronomy club kind of thing to get into, but that it was this cool sort of thing that you could check out.
Are they still doing it?
Well, so the spirit of these cruises still, runs on, as I say.
Wow, let's go on one.
Ted Pedos, he died at age 82 in 2021. I found a very, very sweet obituary to him, and the obituary ended with this line. It's very moving. In Ted's memory, please share a poem or a song with the children in your life. Point them to the stars and begin the countdown to witness a spectacular celestial event, a total eclipse of the sun scheduled for April 8th, 2024. And that was, of course, where I was just 4 days ago and felt, you know, very honored that I could contribute to Ted Pedos's legacy of loving eclipses. I will close with a nugget of trivia too good to leave out here. In reading on the Pedos family website, talking about sort of eclipse mania, they mentioned something that I had never noticed before. There is a line in one of the truly great pop songs, one of the truly great diss tracks of all time, the song "You're So Vain" by Carly Simon.
Yeah.
There is a line in that song specifically talking about the Nova Scotia eclipse
and
how it would be coming a lifestyle event. I never, ever, ever processed this in my entire life.
But what's the line?
I can recite it to you.
Okay, go ahead. Chris, go ahead.
The line is, "Then you flew your Learjet up to Nova Scotia to see the total eclipse of the sun."
Exactly. That's right. And that is the Nova Scotia eclipse that Ted Pedos et al. Were trying to get people out to appreciate. So,
Well, question, Colin.
Yeah.
When's the next visible U.S. eclipse?
Yeah, that's a good question. Not for a very long while, I'm afraid to say. Yeah, not. We're looking at, you know, 20 years or so before the next one over the United States. Yeah. However, in 2 years, if you can get yourself out to Spain or Iceland, you can experience a total solar eclipse in August 2026.
You can spend less time staying in the know about all things gaming and get more time to actually play the games you love with the IGN Daily Update Podcast. All you need is a few minutes to hear the latest from IGN on the world of video games, movies, and television with news, previews, and reviews. You'll hear everything from Comic-Con coverage to the huge Diablo 4 launch. So listen and subscribe to the IGN Daily Update wherever you get your podcasts. That's the IGN Daily Update wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, I have one last segment. I have watched Moana now every day, and counted for the last 45 days. Last 45 days, I've watched Moana every day. And this is because my four-year-old has graduated from frozen water to now ocean water with her Moana obsession. The Disney animation film about a girl whose love for the ocean calls out to her. And she also meets the demigod, who is played by Dwayne The Rock Johnson. They go on adventures at sea. All right. So as I'm watching this, you know, for the 41st time, 42nd time, I'm like, oh, didn't they just open some sort of Moana attraction in Disney World? Oh, maybe I should take my daughter there. She'd love it. But yes, so in Disney World, at Epcot, they actually have a, it's like a walkthrough.
Yeah, we did it. It's
jumping water, you know, waterfalls and jungly paradise topiaries and landscapes.
It teaches you about the water cycle as you walk through it. Yes.
But did you know that Disney announced that they are building a Moana land?
Oh. No.
A Moana land and Zootopia land.
Oh.
Really?
They just debuted Zootopia Land in Shanghai, Disney.
Oh.
There's not a lot of information, but I was like, man, I wonder what they might do there. So, of course, when I wonder about what Disney will do, I dive into one of my favorite activities late at night is reading the USPTO patent library.
Right.
Yeah. Hot Thursday night activity. A lot of stuff going on. So really, I'm just going through what are some of the recent patents that Disney has
a little window into what they're rolling out,
what they're working on. So for this segment, I'm going to share some cool things. I will say this, Disney files a lot of patents. They got a lot of fingers and a lot of pies and a lot of fingers in the pies. A lot of the more recent patents are all around what I'm guessing Disney Plus and streaming. A lot of like network stuff. Yeah. A lot of like machine learning, security stuff. But, you know, I want to find the cool patents for park stuff, for rides, or for, you know, for entertainment.
And animatronics.
Animatronics or robot stuff. I will share some. And of course, I did find a Moana patent. Thank you very much. This patent is called the Boat Motion Simulator. Flavor text here. A boat motion simulator or system configured specially to impart boat type motions such as roll, sway, pitch, surge, heave to a passenger boat. There's a passenger boat. You're sitting in the boat. But instead of traversing through a course, you're kind of just there, but everything is controlled and you're in water. The bottom of the boat is in water and you're in a dome. Like you're in your little MSG sphere. And so you can imagine, right? Like you have a lot of rides now that's like 3D projected. So you're in this boat. They have like water effects splashing to like simulate turns and waves and stuff. How do I know that this is a Moana attraction? I mean, I could have guessed. They'll never say what's it for in these patents. And that's the thing. When you're reading patents, the verbiage is so generic.
Dry and technical.
But there are always pictures. A lot of these patents have to have technical drawings and figures. Most of them are very, very, very rudimentary drawings. But this one had the dome. And what's projecting is a computer drawn like stick figure of Moana and Maui on her boat. Can't miss it. I was like, this is Moana for sure. Even though it's made with MS Paint lines.
Karen's zooming in looking for hey, chicken. Yeah, I see him there.
You wait till I get to some other patents that sleuthed out. And here's some other ones. Similarly, Disney is also filed a patent for a vehicle entertainment system and method field. And that sounds fine and dandy. What is it? It is basically you're in your car and you drive through a tunnel experience. You're in your own car and they project stuff. You're in like one of those, you know, those automatic car washes where it like advances your car.
Yeah, you're on the track.
But this is like high tech. We don't know if they're ever going to use these patents. They're filing it as they're developing, right? Just to kind of stake their flag on the ground. And there was another car patent too. You're in your car, you drive into your own MSG sphere and it can project things. And all of a sudden it feels like you're driving through an African safari. This is pretty cool. Disney has filed a patent for robotic Sherpa. It is essentially a locker bot on wheels for when you're in the park. You got to bring your stroller. Your
just big... follows you around.
Well, no. You put your stuff in one area. Say you bought a bunch of stuff in Main Street, USA, and you're like, I got like a baby stroller. I got all these diapers. I don't want to carry this stuff around with me. I'm going to put it in a locker. Put it in your locker. Then you're like, I'm going to go to Critter Country or some other part of the park. And you're like, I need those diapers. Boop, boop, boop on your phone. And then this locker robot with your stuff in it will wheel to you.
Wow.
Here you go, ma'am. Here's your diapers. Open your stuff. Put in your code. Beep, boop, beep, boop, beep. Robotic Sherpa.
That is pretty cool.
Some stuff that's like not a surprise. Very cool, but not a surprise. This patent for an aerial show system with dynamic participation of unmanned aerial vehicles. And the picture is Captain Hook's flying ship carried by a drone.
Right. I was going to say, yeah, drones doing something, carrying something. Okay.
10 years ago, 20 years ago, I'd be like, wow, that's magic. Now it's like, of course you'd have this patent. there are water slide patents. There are patents for sippy cups or sipper cups or beverage drinkware.
Man, like just their footprint is so large. Everything from sippy cups to projection to right.
Right after lockdown, they filed for a transparent and multifaceted face mask, which is a specific clear face mask, which I'm guessing is for the cast members and the staff to wear like at the parks. But this is like months after shutdown that they've already put in a patent. And there's one, let's say you're on a ride, you're in your little vehicle. Basically, they can plop your vehicle unit onto a different track. So this is a patent for you, like, oh, you're on this one track. All of a sudden, instead of like changing tracks, they plop your vehicle onto a different track for maybe a different attraction. Who knows?
The claw.
And I'll end it with this one, Colin. I hope you appreciate my detective work. This patent is for an interactive autonomous robot configured with in-character safety response protocols. Here's the brief. Here's the summary. Conventional autonomous robots often fail to operate in character and therefore fail to faithfully reproduce the expected behavior of the characters those robots are meant to portray. There is a robot, and as it's trying to communicate safety response or alerts to people, that it's doing it in character.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, oh, you know, hi, I'm a fun robot. Emergency detected. It's like they want these like messages to be in character. And I was like, that's weird. Why do they need that? Looking at the figures again, this is very simple shapes, MS Paint. And I'm looking at it, go, oh, those are droids.
Droids. I knew it.
Star Wars droids. There's two. There's one that kind of looks like a trash can. Not even legible as R2-D2 shape, but it's like a cylinder. And the one that's like a circle with a little hat. And I was like, oh, that's like a BB-8 or that's like some sort of droid. I was like, this is for sure for Star Wars Land, Galaxy's Edge.
I love your sleuthing. That's so incredible.
So those are some of the up and coming, just tip of the iceberg.
Independent
tip
research.
Tip of the iceberg.
Being the, I love independent research being done for you here, dear listener. This is fantastic. Great job, Karen.
I know. I mean, I had a existential moment. It was like 1 a.m. and I'm like drinking a Coke. It's all dark. I'm lit by the monitor screen. I'm like zooming in. Oh, let's go to this patent. They're all numbers.
This is my life.
Yeah. Download, 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 download.
It's like some 70s, right, like espionage thriller where you're uncovering this secret, worldwide government conspiracy, but oh no, it's really just Disney how to make it feel like you're on a boat. Yeah.
The fun activity would be go back to older patents and to see what made it through. You know, what are the things we see today that like And hopefully Moana Land will be built, but by that time, I bet my daughter would be totally over it because that's how it goes.
Those are, so you said Moana Land and Zootopia Land. Those are two of my daughter's favorites.
Really?
She loves Zootopia. It makes sense because even in the movie, right? Like it's got the different
little
zones.
Town. It's got the little tiny
like the rodent town and like, it maps on perfectly for a theme park experience.
And quick shout out to listener Kevin, who actually worked on Zootopia Land in Shanghai.
Oh.
And he did a lot of like the funny posters and the details and the writing that you see in the park. That's what he contributed to as Zootopia Land, and if you've been to the new Toontown, he's worked on that as well. So quick shout out, Kevin. That's our supposed to be at sea, but turns out it was kind of cruisy and Disney-ish show. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you listeners for listening in. Hope you learned stuff about patents, about eclipse cruises, about the morgue on a cruise ship, and island territories. You can find us on all podcast apps and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. This podcast is part of Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to other shows like Triviality, Tumble, Science Podcast for Kids, and Queen's Podcast. And we'll see you next week.
Bye. Bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.